Director, so thank you very much for reading that. It was absolutely fantastic. And it's great to hear this morning, something different here this morning. So we're slightly behind time. I will try and speed it up, but we're doing the most important thing that we can do, aren't we? So here we are, we're working our way through John. Let me jump straight in here. Well, with regards to a bit of a recap, okay, at the moment we have Jesus who is totally infuriating all of the Jewish religious leaders. They literally hate it. They cannot stand him at the moment. They can't stand what he's claiming. He's claiming to be the light of the world. He's claiming in order to be the Messiah. In fact, he infuriated me at the pinnacle of it, what we heard last week, of whenever they were claiming to be the followers of Moses, and we know that whenever Moses met God, he described himself, his name as I Am, and that's how he ended last week with regards to Jesus also declaring, Jesus said in verse 58 there, truly, truly, I say to you before Abraham, I am. He was calling himself the same name as their Yahweh, as their God. And this infuriated them. How dare you do this? When they literally picked up stones to kill him. They cannot stand him at the moment. So they're trying to kill him because of who he's claiming to be. Because we're going through, and we've looked at that all through chapter 8, I am the light of the world. The truth will set you free about he's the truth, and they were following lies. They cannot stand him. So after they've been driving him out of the temple and throwing stones at him, you kind of think, okay, time out now. Jesus, if you're a disciple, you'd probably say, okay, Jesus, do you mind if we just lay low for a little while? Let things just settle down, and then we'll come back out, hopefully. We won't be as hated, and maybe they'll be a bit soft and listen to you. That doesn't seem to have happened yet. Jesus is all out on the attack. And he's deliberately being provocative. He definitely is. He's definitely stirring the pot as he's drawing division between their man-made rules and their religious system to who he is. Because that's what we're looking at now, is he's angered them again with regards to in chapter 9. As he's healing a man who was born blind. And of course, the main thing that they've got with him at the moment is that he did this on a Sabbath. The laws that they were given with regards to the Ten Commandments that did come from God, if they should have a day of rest. But we know the Jewish leaders, they piled on a load of other billion other rules that you must do in order to keep this one. And there's Jesus, and he's breaking their man-made laws. He did this on the Sabbath by... You're not allowed to knead dough. You're not allowed to make bread. And they're kind of seeing him by when he created the mud. That was him kneading. Whenever he said to the blind man, go to the pool, that was over the distance that you're allowed to walk, because you're only allowed to walk a certain distance. Because they had to claim, yeah, you weren't allowed to do anything. And so Jesus was continuously breaking their rules. And they couldn't stand it. Of course, Jesus was trying to show and draw everyone back to what God was actually saying. Because remember, the day of rest was for restoration. But what was more restorative than giving someone their sight? But Jesus didn't keep their man-made rules, so they couldn't accept him. And he's drawing the difference to what they thought for salvation, their rules, to who he is. And he's saying that I am the truth, the way, and the life. So let's try and get stuck in here. We're going to be chronological, going through verse by verse, and then kind of go all over the place as I try and squeeze everything in, okay? So just stick with me. All right, so the first sentence here of chapter 9, first verse. As he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. Stop there. This is when I start to write down a load of notes. This is why I'm having to be very disciplined with what I'm saying today, because he literally could go through every verse here in this chapter. But this is important, and I think it's important as a church, as one of the leaders here, just to draw attention to this. Take note that this man was a blind beggar. So he wasn't able to look after himself. He wasn't able to get a job in any form whatsoever. So all he could literally do was be at the side and beg. He was a cast out member of society, literally on the side of the road. And Jesus saw him. Later in the text, as we read through, if you read it through, you'll understand that people didn't even know that this was the man who was once blind. They were arguing over, is this really the man? It shows you how much attention they paid to him, didn't it? They kind of ignored it. Is that him? I mean, we know that this man was probably between the age of 20 and 30, because later on the man said, his parents said, listen, he can speak for himself, he's of age. So he'd actually been on the side of the road begging for decades. And they still weren't sure it was him. That's how ignored that he was by his own community. The fact that Jesus noticed him and approached him. And I think the fact that the blind man, didn't go to Jesus does give us a theological picture of how salvation works. This man was in his blind state, unable to approach Jesus, but it was Jesus who approached him. It was Jesus who gave him sight. And that's why we look at verses of while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Us at the side of the street blind. And I just felt it was important, as we as a church, as you as individuals, as me, what am I prioritizing? Where am I putting my efforts? What am I thinking about evangelism as we continue to the lifelong discussion about what we should do as a group of believers, but also as individuals? We need to point out that Jesus meets those on the fringes of society, on the fringe of society. The ones who he disliked, even the Zacchaeus, the tax collector, who everyone else hated, Jesus noticed him. Jesus noticed this blind man, the vulnerable, the disliked members. As I said, the religious leaders, whenever they started to discuss this man and investigate whether he was the one who actually got blind, the religious leaders of the day didn't know who he was. So that gives you an impression what they were putting their attention, what they were focused on. They didn't know him. So it's just a reminder to me, it was the members of the fringe of society, the outcast ones, the ones that no one else wanted to meet. That's who Jesus went to. Verse 2. And as his disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Wow. Big question. There we are. He's blind. They want to know the reason why he was blind. Now, the Jewish leaders at the time, they taught a thing called the law of retribution, which means if anything bad happened to you, if there was suffering of any sort whatsoever, it's because you basically deserve it. You're a sinner. You've done something wrong. And if you happened, then your parents have. Okay? And you can even, they even taught that babies could sin in the womb. And that's why they came out with maybe some disability or some suffering of some sort, because that's the consequences of their own sin. And it's not far from the teachings of today. You think it's weird? Everyone talks about karma. Everyone talks about karma. Do good, you get good. Do bad, you get bad. Oh, I must deserve it. It's not too far off of what we teach today. And it's the same line of thinking of that Job's friend in the book of Job that he had in his friend, Job, who was a very rich man in this country. He had a huge family, huge assets. And of course, everything was taken from him, where he suffered horrendous terror and suffering and loss. But we know through these accounts that Job was a blameless man. And neither was this, because Jesus made it very clear it wasn't because of his parents or because of the man. Now, I do need to say one caveat, because it can be quite tricky. It's not as black and white as me as just saying that. It's nothing to do with sin. Because while it's clear from Scripture and Jesus' answer here, it's nothing to do with their direct sin, it is true to say that all suffering, all death, all pain, it is derived from sin. We all know the world's broken. All of us have seen consequences and faced the consequences of what it is when Adam and Eve and ourselves, when we choose as they have in order to reject God and to live for themselves, when the relationship was broken and we've been paying the consequences. And that's why, listen, we long for a new heaven and a new earth where there's no more pain, there's no more tears, and that's the message of hope that is to come. There's pain and suffering because of consequences. But listen, to plow on, Jesus makes it clear that the suffering here is not related to their personal suffering. As he answers in verse 3 there, Jesus answered, it was not that this man sins or his parents, but the works of God. So listen to this. It wasn't because of the man or his parents. This is the reason. But the works of God might be displayed in him. You could take a Sunday just from that verse alone. What does that mean? That the works of God might be displayed. The disciples, in asking Jesus the question, were reaching for blame. Disciples wanted blame. Jesus gave purpose. The man's blindness is not a riddle about guilt, but it's a canvas for God's work. So this maybe gives us a suggestion about how we should approach our own pain and our suffering that comes in our way. Are we asking the right questions? Now, I do think it's inevitable that we ask the question, why me? I think we're limited as human beings. I think that is just one of the things. Why is this happening to me? I don't know if we could ever help that. But I do think through these passages that we can learn the greater question would be, what purpose is this happening? What might God do through this? How is it I can display God's work in the very situation that you are in today or will face in the future? It's not a cause issue, it's a purpose issue. And that's why whenever we turn to verses of such as Romans 8, verses 28, it helps us understand what that really means. It says, and we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good for those who are called according to his purpose. So how can suffering display God's glory? When I wrote that down, I just thought, that's a comment everyone might agree with. What does it mean? So I thought, this could be three subjects. So like three suggestions of what this means, right? I'm sure there's more. But here's three. It can refocus our hearts. There is no doubt, if you are like everyone else in the world, that you will get distracted by the shiny, glittery things that the world has to offer. You'll be drifting down by the river, and you'll think about your house, and you'll think about the car, and you'll think about all these materials, you think about your job, you think about power and love, and all the wonderful things the world has to offer. And you will be infiltrated, influenced by it. I know I do. And sometimes when the suffering comes into your life, it's like the records, the needle of the record is scratching off, and suddenly everything stops. And it makes you reevaluate. I was chatting to someone there just a few days ago, and they had an opportunity to buy into a solicitor's practice, huge solicitor's practice. It's going to make them a name to be known and give them unbelievable riches. And they said they decided not to do it. I said, what? Said, my father passed away very unexpectedly due to a tragedy. No one was expecting that. Maybe stop and think, what's all that for? And it does that. Suffering does that. I've said to you before, there is nothing like suffering in my life to get my prayer list back on track. I'm on my knees on a daily basis. Sometimes it can stop, and you can, the suffering can just say, hey, what's really important in life? I don't care anymore what car I drive or how big my house is or what wallpaper I have or all the other things. It doesn't matter anymore. It's an internal issue that something matters to you. The second thing is just an opportunity to witness. There's nothing more powerful than a Christian's witness who has lost everything, and yet they proclaim their trust and faith and hope in Christ. And the world looks at them and goes, what are you doing? Why are you not angry? Why are you not devastated? And you talk about the hope that you've got in the treasure that you've got in order to come, that these things don't happen. And what I mean is it gives validity to your words. People know you mean it. Because everything's been stripped from you and you're suffering in a way. He says, let me tell you about God. And we go, wow. How the hell do I have this hope? You're not devastated and flawed like those men who are only living for the world would be. It's great witness for all those people around you. And the last one is it allows you to serve his empathy. Maybe you've suffered in a way, in a very unique way, that only you can really serve someone else who's going through another difficulty of the same sort. But I can give you any, not to say that this is any in any form a same suffering as anyone else, but a lot of you know that Carrie's banged the knee. She needs reconstructive surgery. My wife needs reconstructive surgery onto the knee, and I'm doing more suffering than she is at the moment. But she needs this. And the truth is, I'm only giving you this as an example of what it can be like. That this is an example of suffering, but the truth is, she's been really foul for life, really foul. Mood. And so she needs an operation and the longevity of it, and is it going to be okay? And just it's going to take about a year, and really struggling with it whatsoever. And then suddenly Helena turned up at the door, and Helena turned up, and she's also had exactly the same reconstructive surgery. And Helena turned up at the door, and she had lunch in order for Kerry. Now I was in the house, and I was kicked out, by the way. I didn't get any lunch, right? So. But anyway, she had lunch, but I did hear it, which is why I bring it down. And Kerry said, oh, you shouldn't have brought lunch. She said, no, I remember when I was laid up and I wasn't able to move, I just wish someone had brought me lunch. So what new lunch? In a simple form, if you understand. We know someone else who's gone through cancer and they had a battle with me. And now they hear of other people getting battled, and they put together a box of all the right creams, particularly to do with women, because of the dry skin and certain particular issues that struggles that the women have. And so she puts together a box of her own expense, and it's really expensive, this box, and she goes and delivers it and sits with them. Girls, only she can engage that, and maybe you, through your suffering, you have an opportunity to give God glory while you serve Him in such a way. Look at verse 4, as it said, I'm not getting very far here, am I, in verse 4. Look at the first word that it says, we must work the works of God. Jesus didn't say I, he said we. We must work the works of Him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work as long as I am in the world. I am the light of the world. So, then we get on to the actual miracle. All right, this is it. This is where Jesus gets the guy, he gets his mud, and he puts it into the guy's eyes, and he says, go and wash in Siloam, into this pool. Now, there's no obvious reason with all my research of why he used clay. There's lots of suggestions, of why he used clay, and there's lots of suggestion even why he sent into that particular pool, and they're very good suggestions, but I'm rushing on, because you can do your own research on that. What I want to point out is that it was a very unique way, wasn't it? I mean, this is a church that believes in healing. Particularly over the last month, we've had lots of prayer groups in order for healings. We believe God has answered it. Elders here fully believe in the book of James, where it says to go and lay hands on people. We should do that. That's not a problem. But I'm a man who's very skeptical. I'm just being honest. Okay, you can have a go at me. I'm a man who's very skeptical when I hear churches running workshops for healings. And the reason why I'm skeptical is because, as far as I'm concerned, there's not one way that you heal. So whenever churches come together and say, we're going to go here, and this is how you heal, and this is what you say, and this is the manuscript, I'm kind of like, okay, just trying to work that out. Because I've never heard a workshop say, and what I want to do is stand before the person, spit on the ground, get the mud, cover the mud with the eyes, and tell them what to go to the local swimming pool to wash. I've never heard that one. Don't think that one would work, would it? Don't think people would accept it, because it's pretty disgusting with it, isn't it? Whatever the reason why God and Mother had his own healing properties, and maybe it was because of the dust from the ground, and that's how he created man, whatever the reason is, the point is, to me, it was pretty unspectacular. Spit, mud, and water. So what jumped out to me was how simple this man had got an amazing miracle performed in a very simple way. The message. There's no music, there's no shouting, there's no movement of clouds, there's no lights, there's nothing big. this man simply followed Jesus' instructions. We have a man who was simply being obedient, following Jesus' instruction, and through that, he gained his sight. I mean, this is an amazing miracle. This guy got to see for the very first time. But you thought there would be a little bit more to it, wouldn't you? I mean, at least the disciple could run off and get a smoke machine of some sort, couldn't it? To create a bit of an atmosphere. But no, the amazing miracle took place by the man simply following Jesus' instruction. Now, it is important to point out at this point, at this moment, because this is where I'm trying to draw the bridge, okay? It's important to point out that this blind man represents our natural spiritual state. He was in darkness. He was born into darkness. He was unable to see light. And he needed Jesus to bring the light into his life. He needed Jesus in order to give him sight. He was unable to do anything himself to change his condition. He was not able, no matter how hard he tried. And the fact that we are dead in our sins, that we are brought into this darkness because of our hearts, and we can only receive life, be forgiven and receive light because of Jesus. Verse 39, it does say, Jesus says, "For judgment I came into this world. Those who do not see may see." There's me. I'm trying to read it without my glasses. I can't see the thing. "For judgment I came into this world, that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind." He wanted to give people this, these sight. And of course, he's not just talking about blind people here. This is why it goes back to chapter 8. Remember, this is all one big story here. We've already talked about, he says, "I am the light of the world." You see how it's connecting? He says, "I'm the light of the world," and now he's giving someone his sight. "I am the light of the world." This is the verse 12. "I'm the light of the world," in chapter 8. "I'm the light of the world. Whoever follows me," whoever is obedient to me, just like the man was obedient, "whoever follows me will have light of the life." And the reason why I wanted to draw this out, this is where my mind went, is because I have met particularly a lot of people recently over the last literally number of months, and a lot of family members now, see, that's why it's fun to come back here. A lot of family members that whenever I talk to them about God, they kind of say, yeah, I get God. I believe it's true. I believe Jesus is true. And I get the fact that I'm separated from God, and I get the fact that the only way I can be right with God is through Jesus, the fact that he sacrificed his blood. I understand all of that, but I just don't get a that's actually how they describe it to me. I don't get a I just don't feel it. I'm not doing anything about it because I just, you know, just I haven't got that surge of whatever it is, that feeling of that I need to commit my life in order to God that way. I don't have that. I understand it all. I accept it all. But I'm just waiting for a smoke machine to come. For a drama, for the thunders to come, for the lightning. I'm waiting for that moment. And I suppose this has been in my head in my prayer life recently. And maybe that's influenced me here this morning. I'm not sure. I believe it all, but I'm just waiting for that magical rush. But the Bible makes it very clear how you receive life through Christ.
Next slide, then.
Romans 10, verses 9 to 10. I can even read that. "If you declare with your mouth, Jesus is Lord, and believe in your heart," that means you mean it. It's very important. It's not a case of just saying these things, that means you mean it. "But if you declare with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart God raised him from the dead, you'll be what?" Does anyone want to add anything to this? You know, this is what I'm thinking. Is it really that simple? Is it really as simple as Jesus putting mud on the man's eyes and telling him to go wash it off? All this man had to do was to trust Jesus. "I think you can do this then. Okay, I'll just go and wash." What he had to do was follow him. So whenever I ask the big questions, do you want to be sure that if you were to die tonight that you would go to heaven? We all want to be able to say yes. But there's many people who can't because they're waiting for something else other than you. There's a man who came to me a long time ago, and I can't say his name because I haven't asked his permission. But he said to me, in wanting that confidence, in answering that question, I want to be able to say yes, and I don't think I can. I don't have that confidence that maybe I haven't done enough. Maybe there's something else. And so we were able to talk about the fact that Jesus died on the cross, that we can't do anything, that I didn't talk about the blind man, but the fact that he can't do anything, and Jesus approached him. We talked about Jesus shedding the blood. And we turned to this verse. And we said, well, this is it. So I said, have you done this? He said, yeah. I believe Jesus is Lord. And do you mean it? Yeah. And then after the conversation, it was a very short conversation. I said, let me ask you again. If you were to die tonight, you'd be sure of going to heaven. He said, yes. I said, why? Jesus. So that's it. He said, what now? So the Bible says to get baptized and go on mission for him. Okay. Go baptize. Do you know what I mean? What else should have happened there? Nothing. He said, I trust Jesus. That's it. It's serious, but it can be that simple. Can you imagine this man standing there blind? Jesus putting the mud onto his eyes and saying to him, okay, now just go down to the pool and wash it off. And then again, do you know what? I just don't feel it today. I'm not sure. Do you know, I think I will. But not today. I think I will sometime go down and do this, but not today. And he sits down, back down in this blind state. Does that make sense? That's what a lot of people do. Might do it one day. There has to be more than this in our minds, isn't there? But just take a moment of the magnitude of this miracle. This man was born blind. He'd never seen the sun. He'd never seen the moon. He'd never even seen the rain. He'd never seen the food that he'd eaten. He'd never seen the color of flowers. He's never seen his mother's face. And he was just about to do this for the first time. This is huge. Yet this miracle is so insignificant compared to the miracle of saving the soul. From being a slave of sin, to sin, where we only basically live for ourselves, being destined for a life in hell with nothing that we can do about it, to suddenly receiving a free gift of salvation, becoming a new creation, as Jesus molds our heart, the way that he molded the clay, he's molding our hearts. To suddenly being going from destined to hell to suddenly being destined to be in God's presence for eternity. That's a miracle. The beggar's body was temporarily healed. His eyesight will go eventually. Age will creep on up on it. But our souls are permanent. The man was born into darkness, but he wasn't going to end it that way. Why? Because he just trusted Jesus. So let me be very clear. It is far better to be in a broken body if you know Jesus than to have an able body and remain in darkness. And why I say that, I can say that confidently, is because I was thinking of a paralytic guy. All right, so this guy, he's paralyzed, he's on a stretcher, and his friends trust Jesus. He trusts Jesus. Let's go to Jesus. He's the one who can save us. And they couldn't get in, so they go onto the roof and they lower him down just to be in front of Jesus. And then a great miracle took place. A paralyzed man laid before Jesus. In Luke 5, it says, when that's Jesus, saw their faith, just trusted it. That was it. Just trusted him. When he lay there in front of Jesus and he had faith in Jesus, Jesus said, your sins are forgiven. The man went there in order for his body to be healed. But Jesus saw the greatest need. He didn't just heal him temporarily, but he actually healed him permanently, transforming his destiny. Jesus actually only went on to heal the man to demonstrate he had the power, that his words were true. Just like he's now healing this blind man, he healed a paralyzed man to say, listen, when I say I have the authority to forgive you, let me prove it. And we have the proof. And everyone could see it. And we have it here today to say this is someone we can trust. Throughout this passage in John, the Pharisees kept on asking, how is this possible? How? In fact, I did a bit of a precept training, and I put a square around every time someone had asked how. I want to know the answers. I want to know the nitty-gritty. I need to understand everything. There are six times how, and only once did someone ask the question who. The blind man asked who. The blind man said, who is Jesus? The first question you ask, I want to know who is Jesus. You know what? That's what's important. Who? Do you want to know who Jesus is? The answer is the Pharisees' question. Every time the religious leaders were questioning, I love the fact that he had such simple answers all the time. And this gives us, I'm not going to go into it this morning, about how we can, if you think you can't witness, get a load of this guy's witnessing and just how simple. He answered them, the man called Jesus made mud, anointed my eyes and said to me, go to the pool and wash. In verse 25, the religious leaders kept on calling Jesus a sinner, and this is how he answered them. Whether he is a sinner, I do not know. One thing I do know, I was blind, and now I see. Like, seriously, I can't, you know, I'm just saying the words that are written down here. Tell me about your life. Hey, well, I don't know. I was destined for hell. And I met Jesus, and I know he's forgiven my life, and I've trusted him, and now I'm not. It can be that simple. You have an opportunity to trust God this morning. You know, he's God over everything. You have an opportunity to move from darkness into light by simply trusting him. Okay. Two more quick things and then I'm done. I was angry with his parents. How could you not be? Your son was blind and then he could see and his parents left him out to dry. So his parents were asked by the religious leaders, who is he? How is this possible that he can see? And they're like, listen, we can confirm he's my son. We can confirm that. But how? You need to ask him. You need to ask him. And the reason that they did that was in verse 22. His parents said these things because they feared the Jews. The Jews had already agreed that if anyone should confess Jesus to be Christ, he was to be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, he is of age, ask him. Persecution taking place here that we've heard about this morning. And they were scared. You would have thought the parents would have been overjoyed at their son being able to see and running around. And who's this Jesus? And hugging him and inviting him for dinner. But no, they were so scared of what people would think of him. But they basically passed the mic over to their son. Do we boldly proclaim Jesus with joy because of the miracle that happened within our lives? This permanent miracle, do we do it? Or do we act more like his parents when we're so scared of what people think? A bit nervous and a bit embarrassed. You're acting like this man who's received, hey, let me just tell you something that really happened to me. Or, no, I can't really talk about that. I'm too scared. Jesus had heard that the man had been kicked out. The Jewish leaders eventually just kicked him out. They couldn't accept him. He was. They thought so little of him that they kicked him out. So Jesus went looking for him. And this is where the real miracle did take place. So again, let's finish it with this. Let's read verse 35 to 38. Now again, same title. Is it that simple? Jesus heard that they had cast him out. And having found him, he said, do you believe in the Son of Man? I do believe in Jesus, I'm God's Son. He answered, who is he, sir, that I may believe in? Jesus said, you've seen him, and he's speaking to you. He's speaking to you. And what did the man reply? He said, Lord, I believe in him. And he worshipped him. He worshipped him. That means there was validity. He meant what he said. He worshipped everything he had. He just like the suffering came into his life. Everything, I've got a new, fresh look on life. Everything that I have, I'm going to use to worship Jesus because he's transformed me. I'm now living for this. This is nothing to me anymore. He worshipped. That's all he asked. Who is he? Jesus said, I'm right before you. I believe. So the man represents all who've accepted Jesus and moved from darkness to light. Who were blinded by sin and have accepted Jesus, and Jesus has opened their eyes. The religious leaders represented those who think that they're not blind, they don't need Jesus, they've got all the, they're still asking, running around asking how and trying to find faults and everything and refusing to accept it, that they're not humble in any way. I'm more important than anyone else. That's who the religious leaders represent. And do you know what the difference between the blind man and the religious leaders are? The blind man knew he was blind. That's it. And when you're blind, and someone says, I can give you sight, you ask, what should I do? How many do you know? When you recognize that you're full of darkness and you're separated from the holy God, and someone says, I can make you right with him and transform your life for eternity, you go, what do I do? And that's my prayer, our prayer. That was the prayer next door that will happen this morning. That you all say, that we ask you the question this morning, do you believe in Jesus? And you ask, who is he? And we say, we're representing him. This is him this morning. He's presenting himself to you. And you say, I believe in God.
See if it helps. So, guitarist, piano, and spare this. Quiet. Yeah, it's just not working. Guitar sorted, the piano.
Well, should I go? Oh, we have the microphone. There we go. We're going to stand to sing at Amazing Grace and an assistant support. Back
so, where's the piano at the moment?
It's guitar. It's on the word.
No, it's dead. But her mic wouldn't work, huh?
Yeah, I don't know what.
And which mic is it?
No.
Where's Andrew's mic?
Number two. Thank you.
Yes.
It's gone off again, hasn't it?
Well, I'm sure the whole thing's a mess. Should I see your husband with the chorus on it either?
Mike's got off again.
Yeah. Sometimes that's them make phone stay that.
It's just,
I don't know.
I suppose.
They didn't come out crying, eh?
Wow, that was interesting.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's the argument. Respect. Okay, no peace. Regards.